welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. In this podcast, we'll be having discussions around the secrets which attract lasting, healthy, fulfilling relationships, creating a healthy mindset, and what women should know and understand about men. Introducing your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, relationship expert, trainer, speaker, and best-selling author of The Cupid's Bow Technique. Lynn's mission is to have a positive impact in reducing divorce, domestic violence, and suicide.
Welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. This is your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts. And today, listeners, I've got a really unusual topic. It's nothing we've discussed before. It's about ADHD and how that affects our intimate and personal relationships. I've got a real great expert on today. His name is Shane Thrapp. He's an ADHD, get my teeth in, life and relationship coach. So welcome, Shane.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. So this is an unusual topic for me to discuss because I've not, as I say, discussed anything like this in my podcast before. But before we get into it, I want you to explain what actually ADHD is, because there will be some listeners on the podcast that won't actually know what that means or what it stands for.
So ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition that many people are born with. It is a hereditary condition. There's a large number of different factors that play into it, but essentially what it is when a person with ADHD is born, their brain is developed in a certain way that causes them to be a slightly delayed behind neurotypical people when it comes to different types of issues and things that people naturally kind of grow into, such as executive functions, cognitive functions, social functions, and different things of that nature. And it causes a lot of difficulties for people because the way that our brains develop in the different timeline causes us not to learn things in the same way. And as we get older, this turns into a large amount of different things like lack of focus, inability to have that same motivation factor as neurotypical people, where they're able just to do things, you know, without really having to be told a whole lot. Memory issues, especially working memory issues, as well as just being able to pay attention, that daydreamer and things of that nature. And it is just essentially it's because of how our brains develop and how they're structured over time.
I definitely said the word "our" a lot in your response there. So are you a person that is somebody that has ADHD?
Yes, I have ADHD and I'm on the autism spectrum.
Okay. Did you notice, you know, as a child growing up that you were different?
Yeah, it was really interesting as a child growing up because for those who are not in the States, I grew up in the northeast corner of Texas. In a very rural area, we grew up on 40 acres of forest and, you know, farmland, and we were about 70 miles from the nearest large town and 20 miles from the nearest small village kind of town. And I was always that odd duck out. There was a large amount of different issues I dealt with. My father was really was an alcoholic, abusive father, so I grew up with a lot of that. But I just never really fit in with people. And I had a hard time up until I turned 12 or so understanding social cues, which was the autistic side of things. And I was just I was a daydreamer. I wanted to get lost in the interesting creative things that are out there. I was very, very hyperlexic, which means I read a significant amount throughout my childhood. And it was very different for me because the things I would be really interested in, I was really interested in, but if I wasn't really interested in it, it was essentially meaningless to me. And that is a quintessential ADHD and autistic trait.
Okay, so did you have any sympathetic teachers that identified this, or were you just, excluded or seen as a troublemaker or anything like that?
I wasn't really seen as a troublemaker. My best friend was, but he was also very ADHD. There's different types of ADHD. There's ADHD, which is hyperactive, which is your prototypical. This is what people think of when they think of ADHD, is the super hyperactive white kid over in the corner who's losing his mind, setting things on fire, just essentially just going nuts all over the place. And there's also the inattentive ADHD. And inattentive ADHD are the dreamers. They daydream. They're not paying a whole lot of attention. They're in their own world. They're kind of doing their own thing. They're not really, they don't have a whole lot of focus. They get distracted easily. And then there's combined. And combined is essentially where there's just multiple different aspects of either side of things. And whenever you throw in the autistic side of things, there's a large social component when it comes to it. And I wasn't a troublemaker, but I definitely had teachers who knew I was different. But one of the biggest problems with people my age, 40s, and people who are in their 30s and people who are older, is ADHD wasn't very well known. And the more rural your population is, the less likely they are to know a whole lot about mental health here in the States. And so I didn't have a whole lot of sympathetic teachers, because the problem was is I was really smart, except for math. Math was not my thing, because
Right.
my teachers wanted me to show my math. That was my
Right.
biggest downfall, was they wanted me to show my math. However, I didn't do the math the way that they did it. And because I didn't do the math the way that they did it, when I would try to show that work, they would sit here and say, "Oh, that's wrong."
Even
And
if you
that
got the
just,
right answer.
right, even if I got the right answer, it was like, "Okay, you didn't do it the right way, so obviously you're not following directions." Yeah, I'm not, because
You
I
worked it
don't
out
do it the same
differently.
way. Yeah, I don't. I worked it out in a different way, and I worked it out almost always mentally, just because that's how my brain works. It figures out the answer whichever direction I need to go. And that's because people with ADHD are also very intuitive, right? We don't really understand why we understand things or how we understand things. We just understand things.
Right, good.
And that causes a lot of odd feelings from people who were like, "Well, why can't you just show me how you did it?" Because I don't know how I did it. I literally just, there's the answer. And that's because of how our brains processes information. And our brains process information at a much higher rate. And because of the differences in how our brains function, there's certain levels in our brains that are the metacognition and the self-awareness and things of that nature. We are not paying attention to how our brain did it. It just does it.
Yeah, I
And
understand
that's,
that.
but that also applies to, like, why did you set the house on fire? Well, because I just did. I don't know why. If, like, things happen very quickly for us, and our impulsivity is also an issue because, again, of how our brain works. Our brains work so fast that sometimes we're not able to catch ourselves from saying or doing things, or things like that.
That might be inappropriate or unsafe, even dangerous. Okay, so getting into adulthood, how did that affect you in your intimate relationships?
Another hallmark of ADHD is boredom. We get bored easily. That's very reflective in my teenage years and young adulthood, was I bounced from relationship to relationship. It Because as a child, to fit in, I had to learn how to mask. I had to mask who I was. And as somebody with autism, I didn't understand the social cues of those people around me until I was 12, and I was watching Oprah, and Oprah had brought on this guy who was talking about body language. He was a body language expert, and he talked about it, and I'm like, "Oh, that's a thing." And I had access to the internet, because that's I was 12 and my mom had bought me a computer and I was like, oh, hey, cool. And so we didn't have Google at the time. So it was just a lot of research on what body language was. And that was a logical way for my brain to quantify body language. And so I started presenting myself in a way that I thought would get me accepted by the people around us. And a lot of people mask. This isn't just a neurotypical neurodivergent thing. It is just our nature is to want to fit in.
Right, yes.
For people with ADHD, though, we often lose ourselves in those masks. We don't know who we actually are. And so when it comes to dating, what we start to do is we hide that person who we naturally are because we want that person to accept us. But we also may take it one step further, especially whenever you're dating and using things like your AOL profiles back in the day, your OkCupid, your Tinder, Plenty of Fish, all of these. You're able to see on a profile what that person is looking for in a relationship or from a person. And so you have this quantified list of things that that person is looking for. So you go through and you find those things. And if you're really interested in that person, you kind of become a chameleon and you kind of try to fit into that mold that they're trying to look for a person. Well, that only lasts so long, though, because after a while, we're going to relax and we're going to stop masking, and that may not be the same person that that person fell for in that initial discussion.
Right.
And that causes a lot of issues. Why aren't you this person? You told me, when we first started dating that you liked going hunting and fishing, but you never take me hunting and fishing. Because I don't really like hunting and fishing. But I know you do, so I said those things. And the problem is that's also a sign of abusive partner. That's
Yeah,
love
because it comes
bombing.
across as dishonest, doesn't it?
Right. But it's the intention behind the thing. I want
Yes.
you to like me, so I will be this person to so that you'll like me. And there's nothing malicious behind it. It's just a fear. It's a fear of being rejected.
Right.
And for people with ADHD, that fear of rejection is significant enough that there's actually a whole term for it called rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And it's a visceral, traumatic, painful, like I don't mean mentally, I mean physically painful feeling when we are rejected. Because we grow up always constantly being rejected by the people around us to the point that we have to mask ourselves so that we can be accepted from the people around us. So we get used to masking ourselves to be accepted for the people around us. And so it's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And yet it's also very dangerous when it comes to relationships. And so I would be in a relationship and 6 months would go by and I would relax, and that person's like, who the fuck is this person? And like this is not the same person I started dating. And invariably there's that distrust now, and any relationship that's founded on distrust is eventually going to implode.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I had game. And I understood how to talk to people because I had taught myself in a logical manner how to quantify people and utilize my natural intelligence to essentially just find other people who would date me. And so I would go from girl to girl to girl to girl to girl to girl, dating all these different people. And that meant that I dealt with a lot of breakup and I did a lot of harm to people and I did a lot of, damage to friendships and things of that nature because I just wasn't aware enough that to understand how important my authenticity was.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't learn that until I was 28.
Right. Yeah. I think, that's true to even people that aren't on the spectrum, to be honest.
And it is, this isn't a particularly neurodivergent thing, but it is more significant in neurodivergent populations, simply because of the different factors that play into it. But another thing that falls into that is when you don't understand the necessity of loving yourself for who you are and respecting yourself for who you are, you often find yourself in relationships with people who also do not love you for who you are and respect you for who you are. And that gets us into a lot of trouble, and it makes us targets, honestly, for people who are actually narcissistic. And so we get a lot of people with ADHD or autism who get into these really abusive relationships with these people who really thrive on the intensity of our emotions and the intensity of our initial attraction. And when we stop giving that intensity to that person, they start lashing out at us. And we find ourselves trapped in these relationships that we are so desperate not to be alone that we stay in them because, multiple reasons. A, we most likely were modeled those kinds of relationships with our parents, especially in abusive homes, but also because, like, it's scary being alone. And again, it goes back to that rejection sensitivity issue, because people with ADHD feel things more. Part of the issue that we have in our brains is we feel all emotions much more intensely than neurotypical people do. Our happier, our highs are much higher, our lows are much lower, our rages are much more intense, our frustrations can get overwhelming. It's a very overwhelming sense of like a loss of control almost when it comes to many of our emotions. And so that's one of the reasons why when we also look at ADHD, we also have to play into the factor of or we have to talk about the factor of emotional dysregulation, which is a big issue for people with ADHD and autism.
Right. So, for you then, I suppose you not only maybe caused heartbreak for whichever partner you was with, but you was on the receiving end of a lot of heartbreak too.
Yeah. And metacognition, that self-awareness, it's very hard for us to understand when we are the problem. And we sometimes fall into these traps where we start blaming everybody else around us instead of owning our own issues. And that's part of the biggest problem that we have is because we didn't grow up understanding the importance of being who we were because nobody around us would accept us for who we were. They would only accept us if we followed the rules, did what we were told to do, performed the way that we were supposed to perform, acted the way that we were supposed to act in a social situation, and anything that deviated from that was considered weird and othered. And we see this in LGBT populations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And do you think it's improved today, or do you think it's still way behind where it needs to be?
Oh, it's still way behind where it needs to be, but it is better. A lot more people are starting to be much more open and understanding about what it means to be neurodivergent, having ADHD, autism, having significant trauma. A lot of people are starting to get that there is a very diverse neurobiology of brains, and people are actually very different, and the status quo is not necessarily as static as we think it is. It's much more dynamic, and people are starting to understand that. However, there is still a lot of stigma around medications. There's still a lot of ignorance about how to manage ADHD and autism. There's still a lot of stigma around ADHD and autism themselves. And there's still a significant problem in our school systems, especially here in the States, when it comes to helping people who are neurodivergent feel accepted, feel safe, and have the ability to, utilize their strengths and their skill sets and not have to depend so much on, focusing on their weaknesses and their mistakes, right? We don't learn from our mistakes. We don't learn how to learn from our mistakes. And that's a big difference between people with ADHD and people without ADHD is that back to that metacognition, that self-awareness. How do I actually look at the mistake I made and understand how to learn from it?
And also, I suppose there needs to be more understanding about how people who are neurodivergent learn, and what other alternative ways and methods can we come up with to help you learn to get similar results to people that aren't neurodivergent? Yeah. And I think actually the whole school system needs a good shake up, to be honest with you, because it, at the end of the day, it's just a memory game for most people, isn't it? If you can't remember how to actually revise stuff to pass an exam, then you're not going to get the, ABC results and get into the university or college that you want to get into. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're, any better at doing a specific job eventually than somebody that hasn't got those qualifications.
Yeah, honestly, it's a big deal when it comes to that. And kind of going back to what I was talking about earlier, because of the neurodevelopmental stages between ages of 2 and 12, when we're looking at children in school who are neurodivergent, in some aspect of those different things that I talked about, executive function, cognitive function, social functions, and different things like that, behavioral functions. The average person with ADHD maybe as far back as 4 years behind their peers, anywhere from 2 to 4 years. And so a 6-year-old who has ADHD is 50% more likely to be to or is 50% more hyperactive than a neurotypical child. They have the hyperactivity of a 4-year-old or a 3-year-old. Yet the expectation of that child is that they are 6 and they should be able to act like other 6-year-olds, but their brains aren't developing at the same rate. The way that our minds work, and now it does even out eventually, but people with ADHD do tend to be a little bit more delayed in how they develop over time throughout the entire life.
Right. Okay. So there's that to take into consideration, obviously, as well as different learning opportunities to be presented to fit in with the way that those brains that are different can process it easily.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% up to speed on like the UK and the education system here, but in the United States, we really did away with a lot of recess. We did away with a lot of creativity, artwork, doing the different, music, doing different types of learning methodologies. It's very much like you said earlier, focused on testing, 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 testing. And that's not how our brains function optimally. We need to have breaks in between different, parts of our day so that we can get out and run around and lose our minds and burn off the energy that we're building up. Because for us, sitting in a chair for 8 hours straight is essentially just murdering us, especially our children. And this is across the board, all children need this kind of stuff, but it's especially harmful for people who have ADHD because their brains aren't really designed to be still. We naturally think faster, think more, we process things differently. Time blindness is literally our way to measure time. So for everybody else that's here saying, oh, I'm in class for 6, 7 hours, for us, it's like 97 hours. Because we're bored. And
Yeah.
then of course, like when we are in something we really enjoy, like art class, it took 10 minutes. It because we get really wrapped up in those things that we really enjoy. And a lot of the things that we really enjoy are creative pursuits across the board.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting, very interesting. So how has your, since your specialist in relationships, how did that come about for you?
Been in a lot of relationships. No. What kind of happened for me was I got into a very abusive relationship when I was in my when I was 22. I married this woman. I ignored all the red flags, and we had children together, and I did try to do my best to make the relationship work. But because I was so dramatically different from whenever we first started dating, and she wasn't getting the attention that she really wanted from me because I got really burnt out, really sick, really tired. I was working 100 hours a week on average to try to provide for the family and still be a father and still do chores around the house and things of that nature. And I was not able to give her a level of attention that she needed. And of course, that causes a lot of, bitterness and anger and frustration. And I kept trying to make the relationship work. And that made things really problematic. Now, the reason I got into ADHD coaching was because whenever I started learning about ADHD and developing about who I was, I had found myself really needing to be authentic. And that authenticity was the key. And when I started to find my way to accept who I was, I started seeing how much better my relationships with other people around me were. And then as I kind of started going through my career and I started going through relationships, I met a woman who, when she saw my dating profile after I decided just to be authentically who I was, she liked me. She liked me a lot. And we connected. And our relationship is absolutely amazing. She's a special needs teacher, which is yay. But at the same time, she taught me so much about how to be in healthy relationships that it became a passion of mine. And again, people with ADHD, we tend to focus on those passions of ours. And that became this lifelong goal to help educate people both about ADHD and autism and how that affects our life and our relationships. And the more that we paid attention to those things, the more that we found our authenticity, the more that we find our way through, these relationships being who we are, not who we think that they want us to be, the more likely we are to find very strong, very well-founded and well-built relationships with everyone.
You know what? I 100% agree, and you know what? It's not necessarily applying to neurodivergent people. You know, I think we all, to a certain degree, are inauthentic. You know, until we learn not to be and just accept ourselves, love ourselves, and present ourselves, and trust that you know you will be loved on the back of you reflecting the love that you have for yourself and acceptance you have for yourself.
Yeah, with ADHD though, it's a little bit more difficult because, not a little bit, it's a lot more difficult for us because we don't have that metacognition, the self-awareness, so that we don't really ever learn how to love who we are. Like, because it's very difficult for us to see that, to know that, because it doesn't register for us in our brains. And a lot of what we do learn about ourselves is almost always going to be through third party, so our family members, our friends, or teachers. And if we're growing up through the 2 years old to 12 years old range, and all we're ever being told is that we're broken, we're damaged, we're not worthy, we're not worth it, just like that would affect anybody, right? For us, we're literally developing who we are based on those third party because of our lack of self-awareness.
Gets
It's
compounded
this.
almost.
Yeah, it's a significantly worse issue for people with ADHD, autism, or deal with like trauma.
You know what? This has been a really fascinating conversation, and I've learned such a lot. So thank you so much, Shane. And for anybody that's listening that would like to connect with you, what is your best contact information?
You can look me up on any of the social medias at Creating Order from Chaos, but you can find me on my website, www.creatingorderfromchaos.com.
That's a great title. I love it. Any final words of wisdom that you can pass on to our listeners around, you know, ADHD in relationships?
I think this one's just something that everybody needs to pay attention to across the board. It's okay to live a life that other people don't understand, Just be who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that applies across the board for everyone. And it certainly, you know, was something an issue for myself. I can think about, you know, where the time when I wasn't having that sense of self-worth, wasn't loving myself, wasn't even aware that it was a thing that people didn't love themselves. So I can definitely relate to some of what you've said. And then going on my own personal development journey, you know, getting to a point where I did start to accept and love myself and know that I was worthy of great love was a game changer. So thank you for sharing your thoughts around ADHD, and I really appreciate it, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. I really had a lot of fun.
Okay, so listeners, it just leaves me to say that true love starts with opening our hearts. And until next time, goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Hearts Entwined podcast. You can follow Lynn via the Facebook group Two Hearts Entwined, or search Lynn Smith, inspirational speaker, at LinkedIn, or email lynn@hearts-entwined.com. That's lyn@hearts-entwined.com. Remember, true love starts with opening our hearts.